This is the moment you've all been waiting for.
DC and RC.
Welcome to a brand new episode of DC.
Coming to you from Lafayette, Louisiana.
It's DC and RC.
Hailing from Aurora, Louisiana.
It's fight night. Catch your right hook in your right eye. Change how you look. Daniel, Cormier, yeah, and Ryan Clark, the champs are here. With battle scars, it's warfare. Louisiana's in the air. From Aurora to Lafayette to Los Angeles to Times Square.
I could go one show without you going, I'm a Super Bowl champ.
When the mic's on, it's showtime. DC and RC, we winning Super Bowls and Emmys. And Daniel got two belts around the belly.
Oh, UFC history! Daniel Cormier!
Hey, I'm DC, two division champ. I ran the UFC.
Because we asking all the tough questions.
This guy's the worst, actually. I don't know how you can do a show with
DC, you broke my heart.
This is MMA, mixed martial all-stars. And we got that grind and pound, so be on guard. Round, cause we want it all, but there can only be one in the octagon. DC and RC, DC and RC, DC and RC, ESPN, tune in to see.
What's up, guys? Welcome to a brand new episode of DC and RC. I'm Daniel Cormier. That's Ryan Clark, RC. What's up, my guy? I was in Louisiana last week. Gonzales, which is pretty close to your house. I drove past, but I couldn't get past the security gate. I went up to the gate. Security was armed. They said, get away from Ryan's house. You don't look like you belong here. It was unfortunate that I got treated that way, RC, as I pulled up to your compound.
Well, first off, that would never happen if you came to my house, because all you gotta do is just press the code on the gate. Now, what happened was I just wouldn't give you the code because I didn't want you in my neighborhood. I didn't want the property value to drop. But, man, congrats on your team going to Gonzales and dominating, dog.
Yeah, it was a good weekend, even though we did play with death trying to go and visit Ryan Clark. Guys, coming up on the show, we're going to talk about UFC 297. And as always, we tap in or we tap out. But RC, your boy, I mean, we are leading the show with your boy, Jim Miller. Your boy, my boy, Jim Miller, the ageless wonder, got it done against last week, beating Mowgli Benitez, ties the record for most wins in UFC history at 26. What do you make of it, RC?
DC, I mean, I think the first thing is longevity matters, right? The ability to be relevant in the UFC or in mixed martial arts for a long time. And that's what Jim Miller has done possibly better than anyone who's ever fought. And we think about the knockout the last time, which brought up the discussion with us about Hall of Fame. And then also now you look at this, to be able to get a submission in this fight, to be the guy with the most tied for the most wins, you know, the most appearances. I think what he's done is cement himself as one of the biggest names or best names to have ever done it. And a lot of people believe he should be a Hall of Famer, but according to you, he shouldn't.
I don't feel like time served immediately puts you in the Hall of Fame. Look, he's got more wins than anyone else, but I love Jim Miller, and this makes it hard for me. But I just don't feel that time served puts you in the Hall of Fame.
DC, does this win change your mind about Jim Miller and the Hall of Fame?
Oh, boy. First off, congratulations to Jim Miller on winning another fight, doing something that not many people believe can be done, especially at this age. The guy's a warrior. He's a fantastic fighter. He does things that you don't even expect anymore, right? Because he's fighting younger guys. He's still winning. And not only is he winning, he's submitting him and knocking him out and doing all this great stuff. But, and I constantly have this conversation with people. I still don't know. Like, I just don't know when RC, we talked about this last year. All those records. Look, I believe that him being in the octagon 45 times or 43 times is going to stand the test of time. I don't know that as we go forward, there will be anyone that can compete at that level for as long as Jim Miller competes at that level. The wins, though, I do believe at a point will get topped. And if you put people in the record, in the Hall of Fame based on those records, and then they get topped, then what are they in the Hall of Fame for? It would be like, you remember when Cal Ripken, he played more games than anybody. He was called like the Iron Man of baseball, and he wouldn't miss games. And they wouldn't have just put him in the Hall of Fame for being an Iron Man, RC. He had to have the stats that also match. Jim Miller's won a lot of fights. But think about this. He has the most wins in the UFC's history with 26. He's fought 43 times. RC, right. He's lost 17 times in the UFC.
He had to lose 17 times, right. Yep. I think that point stands out, DC. But when you compare what Cal Ripken did or what we've seen with some of these players who have this longevity in team sports, is because team sports is governed by an owner. It's governed by executives who make a choice on where to spend their money. It's a little bit different. Cal Ripken isn't going to have that sort of longevity, because if he's not playing well at a certain age, you go get younger, less expensive talent that could perform at a higher rate. The same thing for a guy like LeBron James. The same thing for a guy like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You point to Tom Brady and what he was able to do from a longevity standpoint in football, but he also won a championship in one of his last 3 years. And he was a guy that took the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to the playoffs in his last two. And so I think it's much different in team sports. What Jim Miller has been able to do was not be bad enough to lose a UFC contract. And when you think about that, in having 26 wins, which is a record, in having 18 finishes, which I think is tied for second, in 12 submissions, which is only behind, I believe, Charles Oliveira, you look at all of those things and it says Jim Miller's longevity has produced success. But Jim Miller doesn't need my voice because he used his own.
DC had 15 UFC fights, and in his 15 UFC fights, now granted, he ended up getting the title and stuff like that and double champ. We had the same record in my first 15 fights. We had the same exact record. Here I am nearing the end of my third Daniel Cormier career. My record is almost the same. And in that time, every win that I've got is a finish in this third one. I'm still here. I'm still performing. You know, I'm still a dangerous guy, tripling the champ, right? Like tripling his time in the octagon.
DC, before you go, I just want to say this. Let's not get into comparing Jim Miller's career to Daniel Cormier's career. Right? Because we also have to remember that Daniel Cormier comes over as a champion. Daniel Cormier was consistently fighting on main cards and in main events. Right? So this isn't going to be, let's look at Jim Miller's Hall of Fame resume as compared to Daniel Cormier's. We are talking about two different tiers of fighters, two different tiers of competition and success. But Jim Miller makes the case based off of your career, which I think kind of hurts his argument more than helps it.
You know what, RC? I got to agree with you. You know, because anytime you say, granted, he won the championship. Like, I mean,
he won two of them.
Once you won the championship, the argument's over. And I love Jim, because when Jim's saying it, he almost doesn't believe it himself. He's like, well, we had the same record through our first 15 fights in the UFC. But mine, I had 11 title fights in that 15 fights. I literally had 10 or 11 title fights in those 15 fights. I am not saying that Jim doesn't have a unbelievable resume. What I am saying is, RC, we talked about this last year. The lineman from the Rams won a championship. Dude's
Andrew
not going
Whitworth.
Into the Hall of Fame. Andrew Whitworth, he's not going into the Hall of Fame. It's just that simple. He's been around for a very long time. He's been good. but he hasn't been. You know, there are certain people that when they're done, you know, as soon as they're eligible, they're going in. As soon as they're eligible, they're going in. And I just don't feel that. I feel like if Jim does get in, something big is going to happen down the line. I still don't know that win last weekend changes much, because one of my guys that I've trained with for a long time, Mowgli Benitez, is who we beat. But you made a point earlier, RC. You said team sports, the owner decides who stays and who goes. Now, I would love for Corporate Jake to kind of search this while I'm talking about this. The UFC could cut you if you lose two fights in a row. Jim was fighting at a time where you had the opportunity to lose more fights. I don't know what his longest losing streak is, but if you lost two, three fights in a row, they had the right to cut you. So it was just a matter of, was that Jake? Yeah, he's lost four in a row. He lost four fights in a row. How often, RC, do you see someone lose four fights in a row and not get cut? So it's like he was kind of riding that border, riding that fine line. So I do respect the hell out of everything he's done, but I still don't think that it's a Hall of Fame career just because he never truly reached. As much as people want to talk about Cowboy Cerrone being in the Hall of Fame and he shouldn't, he fought for the title. And I believe that if you fight for the title, or at least you touch the mountaintop, then you can be seen and held in that high regard as some of these other guys. Hey, Jim Miller can be done, RC, and there will be nothing to be ashamed of. He fought till he was in his mid-40s. He was still winning, but I just don't know. And honestly, like, I've asked if Jim Miller is going into the Hall of Fame. I've asked people in the know what they think, and Izzy, and overwhelmingly, the answer was they didn't think that he was.
So I was talking to Jeff Saturday in the green room one time, and we were talking about how sometimes there are these people that get into the Hall of Fame and it gets sort of water it down. He said, he gave this suggestion, and obviously this will never be it. He said, when you think about the Hall of Fame, it shouldn't be the Hall of Very Good. It should be the Hall of Excellence. It should be the Hall of the 0.01 percenters of the 0.01%. And you should be able to walk into a room of this person's or player's peers and say their name and know it. You should be able to walk into a room and go, Barry Sanders, right? And I think everybody in that room goes, Hall of Famer. You should be able to walk into that room and go, Tom Brady. Everybody in that room goes, Hall of Famer. The same with a guy like Lawrence Taylor. The same with a guy like Ed Reed, Troy Polamalu, Deion Sanders. And I think when you start to think of the Jim Millers, that's not the resounding sentiment. You're not going to walk into a room full of fighters who understand the fight game and say, Jim Miller and the Daniel Cormiers and the Jose Aldos and Anderson Silvas raise their hands and say, yeah, that guy is a Hall of Famer. But it doesn't discredit or take away from what he has been able to accomplish. And the last thing I'll say is this, and I know I can't disrespect Jim Miller because I can't do and have never done what Jim Miller could do. The only reason we're talking about Jim Miller on this show and this win is, one, the positive, he's fought long enough to be a topic of conversation. Two, because you brought it up that he shouldn't go to the Hall of Fame. If not, this isn't a fight that is being talked about or people really realize has happened. But one fight that is extremely important and seems that it'll factor into the light heavyweight title contention is Magomed Ankalaev fighting Johnny Walker. And he was able to get the win, second round knockout that was absolutely phenomenal. He lands a strike, but it was the uppercut to me, DC, while Walker was along the cage, that was the shot that seals it. Should Ankalaev have the next shot at fighting Poatan for the title?
You know, RC, you made some great points on the Miller conversation, but when you think about Ankalaev, this is a guy that unfortunately for him fought for the belt with Jan Błachowicz. They went to a draw. The division kind of moved on. It moved on, and then he goes to Abu Dhabi and he fights Johnny Walker. and they get the eye poke and the weird stoppage and all the other stuff. So it just felt like he wasn't as viable, and you kind of start to forget about him a little bit. But then he goes last week and does what he does. He has long been considered the guy. Everybody thought that it was a matter of time until Magomed Ankalaev became the UFC light heavyweight champion.
Right.
That result makes that case stronger. There's one issue with that. When you go out and you tell Glover, I am going to beat your guy, and then Glover Teixeira goes, great knockout, we'll see you soon. It seems like it's all coming together. But then the champion, to his credit, says, I want to fight Jamahal Hill.
Yep.
It's not going to be next. But I'm going to tell you, RC, Alex Pereira is a scary, dangerous human being. And he's as good as they come. But I believe that is probably the smartest thing I've seen him do. He went and he said, yeah, I'm going to fight Jamahal Hill. Because I know, after watching Jan Błachowicz get taken down by this dude when he got hurt by his leg kicks, that I don't necessarily want to be involved with Magomed Ankalaev right now. That's a fight for Pereira to take down the line. Because when you look at it, it seems as though it could be the worst possible matchup for him because Ankalaev possesses that ability to ground him, especially after watching Yuri Prochazka have success taking him down.
Yeah. You know what's funny about it? The first thing I thought about was if Jan Błachowicz was able to do to Ankalaev's legs what he did with low leg kicks, can you imagine Alex Pereira, right? With the ability that he has to affect your lower extremities with that leg kick, that low leg kick that almost seems to come out of nowhere, DC. And it also isn't one where he has to rear back to be able to affect you. And so Ankalaev comes out and says, I'm going to strike with him. I'm not going to take him down. That's all tactics to earn the fight. Because we know once those two men get into the octagon, Magomed is going to do whatever it takes to win the fight. And if getting Alex to the ground is the way to win, that's what he's going to do. But what Alex knows is that Jamahal Hill is not going to the ground. He knows that Jamahal Hill will give you an opportunity to strike with him, that Jamahal Hill is willing to take a shot, to give a shot. And what we've learned is probably outside of what Silva early on in the middleweight division, no one has been able to eat Alex Pereira's shots other than probably Silva and Izzy. Israel Adesanya, and he even caught up with Izzy in the fifth round. And so I think this is a smart move. I also think, DC, the Jamahal Hill fight is an exciting fight. You know, for as much as we love what Islam Makhachev can do and Khabib Nurmagomedov was able to do in his heyday, we love a great fight of two dudes standing willing to trade blows, willing to see who the bigger man is, who has the best chin, who has the stronger strikes. And so I'm excited if that's the next fight to see it. My question to you would be, does that make Magomed Ankalaev the number one contender after the Hill-Pereira fight?
Yes, yes. He would be next. And honestly, he could fight someone else, RC, and most would feel pretty confident that he would get past him in his division. I'm telling you, the way that this kid is viewed within the UFC, within the world of mixed martial arts, it just feels like people think it's inevitable, like Islam or one of those guys that you look down the line and you see at some point Magomed Ankalaev carries the UFC championship. But Pereira's smart. Hey, Jamahal Hill's from Grand Rapids. He going to go out there. He going to stand, even if it ain't to his benefit. He going to fight that dude. And, hey, he going to fight that dude in what is the hardest possible fight for Jamahal Hill in the most weird way, leaning back at the waist, but landing. Jamahal Hill would be a nightmare to prepare for as a UFC champion because how do you manage getting to him when he's like leaning back in the way that he does, and he's just not afraid of anything. So I think that's the fight. I think it's going to be a fun fight, but I do believe that Ankalaev is on a short list of guys to fight for that belt. RC, I want to talk UFC 297, sorry. But boy, yep. I love when y'all use that word extremities. I love when y'all use the word extremities. Because boy, y'all TV people sure like that word. But RC, this weekend, Sean Strickland and Drakus Duplessis fight for the middleweight championship of the world. These guys, RC, have had such a bad rivalry. It's gotten ugly. Sean Strickland was on Theo Von's podcast a couple weeks ago. He was crying about some of the childhood trauma that he dealt with. The childhood trauma was brought up by Duplessis at the press conference, and it caused that fight inside the arena. These guys now, it's so personal, RC, that Sean Strickland said if Drakus brings it up again, he's going to stab him. I mean, this is crazy. So for these two to be finally getting it mixed up, getting into the fight, honestly, is, I honestly think it's therapy. Because I think these dudes need to fight each other to get to the bottom of this. Luckily, it's two of the best middleweights in the world.
Yeah, you know, it's weird, right? The first middleweight championship bout without Israel Adesanya in 6 years. And it sort of needed this storyline. I think Sean Strickland understands who his audience is. He understands how to capture those people. And now it's how do you capture the rest of the world and get them interested in your fights? Because he has a fighting style that's a little awkward, right? The Philly shell, it's built on defense and sort of an awkward way of approaching your opponents. And then you have Drakus Duplessis on the other side who has shown knockout power, so much so he drops Robert Whittaker with a jab. And now you have this actual tension between the two men. Sean Strickland jumping over chairs inside the arena to get to Drakus Duplessis, actually throwing hands and, as Ludacris said, throwing bows. And so I'm excited to see how this fight plays out. But I don't think either of these men, or let me say this, I don't think Sean Strickland gets out of character or gets out of pocket. He's shown to be one of the best boxers in all of UFC, and I don't think we actually point to that enough. I think we kind of circle back to the Alex Pereira knockout and go, okay, Sean Strickland isn't that dude. No, he just got hit by a guy that could punch through a freaking wall, right? I think that Sean Strickland has an opportunity. He has an opportunity, DC, though, in this fight to say, I've loved and I am a world-class champion fighting against a very game contender in Drakus Duplessis.
You know what's funny? I think that we as a sport overlook how mentally tough Sean Strickland is because we talk about all of the things from the past, some of the absurd things that he might say. But the moment he gets into the octagon, he stays the course. RC, you made a great point there. He was talking about Israel Adesanya and dogs and all kind of crazy stuff in the build to the last fight. They stepped into the octagon, and he looked like he had no issue with Izzy. He was there to do a job, and he was going to do it in the best way possible. I think that is what's most overlooked about Sean Strickland is because regardless of the emotional outbursts that he may have in the build to these fights, when he's in there, he fights with a game plan. And I don't anticipate that's going to change against Drakus Duplessis. Now, Drakus is a guy that I have overlooked time and time again. I love too, that he has thick skin because I have said so many times how he's tired, how he's fatigued, how he does things so awkwardly. Is he really good? Guess what, man? The answer is a resounding yes, because when you could do what he did to Robert Whittaker, you can't not be good and do that to Robert Whittaker when we know what we know about Robert Whittaker. He's odd. He's awkward. He's huge for the weight class, and he is a real dangerous opponent for the champion, Sean Strickland. If Strickland's not on his game, we're going to have a new middleweight champion.
DC, can I be honest with you? Can I tell you something from an honest perspective, man? And I know sometimes I kept some flack. Bro, I hate watching Drakus fight. I think it is like it's Bro, DC, dog. The fight against Brunson was one of like the ugliest things I've ever watched. Man, we got blonde Brunson running around the octagon, tired as hell. He had laid on Drakus for like the entire first round. I thought Drakus was gonna be out. Then Drakus was tired, bro. It looked like when your two uncles fight at the family reunion, but can't neither one of them land a punch. And so now they just fight with their hands on their leg like this, bro. For real, DC. Like, I know they're gonna be mad at me, dog. And you said he's awkward and you think he got thick skin. I don't like it, bro. I don't like watching Drakus fight. And so I don't, but then I watched him punch Robert Whittaker, right, who is one of the best mixed martial artists in the world, right? One of the top middleweight fighters in the UFC. And it just showed the immense power that he possesses. He is such a large middleweight too, bro. This dude is ripped. This dude is strong. And he fights in a way, DC, that though it's different or sort of weird, it's effective and it's devastating and it's damaging. Mm-hmm. And so if he does touch Sean Strickland, who is a great defensive fighter, that sort of power is an equalizer. Because what we know of Sean, even though he dropped Izzy in the first round of that championship fight, he's not necessarily a guy that's a one-punch sort of power knockout guy.
RC, isn't that weird, though? Isn't that weird how you could watch a Robert Whittaker seem to do everything the right way, and Drakus Duplessis is fighting in that very strange type of style that works for him, and it's so effective. And then you have Sean Strickland in front of Israel Adesanya, a kickboxer, essentially boxing him the whole time, and Izzy can't do nothing. That's why mixed martial arts is such a great sport, because it's not done the same way. You know, I always kind of think about football in the sense that everybody follows. So when everybody did the triple option at Nebraska, everybody did the triple option. When everybody started running the spread offense, everybody ran the spread offense. Everything kind of looks similar, RC, and I'm pretty sure there's a lot of details in there that we, to our blind eye, we don't see. But to us, it all seems pretty similar. In the UFC, it's very apparent that guys do it different. And Drakus Duplessis is as big a indicator of you can make what you have work better than anyone. And I believe that these two dudes are going to have one of the most explosive fights. But I will say this. I'm not going to let you jump on the sword by yourself. That one was a bit hard to watch. Duplessis versus Brunson was a bit hard to watch because Derek was tired. Derek runs with his chin up in the air. And Drakus is kind of turning and like kind of throwing punches going backwards. And it just was a weird fight. And ultimately it showed that Derek was done in the UFC. And then he moved on after that. But it was an odd one. But even though it's odd, RC, it's very effective, man. And this dude has an opportunity to become world champion. And also in Canada, we also have Myra Buena Silva fighting this weekend against Raquel Pennington for the championship. I don't want to go on that fight. I don't want to talk about the fight. I'm just saying they fight for the championship this weekend. They fight because I don't want you to stick your foot in your mouth any more than you just did on a Drakus Duplessis situation. So I'm just saying there's two title fights this weekend, RC.
I didn't stick my foot in my mouth. What I said. You two division champ, Hall of Famer, you're no Jim Miller. You agreed with me that the fight.
You are crazy.
Hey, I do have a question, though.
That is why. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Because I'm getting off the subject because I don't want to get in trouble. Will Israel Adesanya be waiting in the wing for the winner of this fight, DC?
Okay. First off, like, this is why I love doing the show with you, because you can say anything because you don't even care. You just don't care. It's not like nobody actually fights you. So it's like, all they're going to do is say something. What do you care? What do you care that they say something? Anyhow. I believe, because I was talking about this to somebody the other day. UFC 300 will need something. It will need something. I know they're announcing great fights, but it's going to need something like massive. Izzy coming back to fight Dracus would be enough, I think. So, yes, I believe that Izzy's going to have his eyes out on the fight this weekend. I think he's going to be paying attention. I think he's going to do like a live stream where he watches the fight with the fans. And he's going to give something. Izzy understands the game. Izzy understands how to build something. And Izzy will give something to people this weekend, regardless of who the winner is, that's going to make people go, you know what? Maybe I do want to see Adesanya versus whoever wins the fight this weekend. But he's got two fights. Strickland keeps the belt. Good for Izzy. Duplessis wins the belt. Better
for
Izzy because of the build and the way that they had that moment inside the octagon when the boy Izzy might have took a few too many back to the head before he went in there. Izzy was a little sauced out there going crazy, I think, man.
You know what, DC, man? And I hope Jake doesn't mind this. It's like my world is football. I love the UFC. Yes. I love mixed martial arts, but I was never able to do what you guys do. Like, I look at this fight game like a reporter, right? I study it. I train in some of the mixed martial arts when I was a player, but I have to watch the fight and really diagnose it, look at the strikes and all those things. But I'm going to compare Israel Adesanya to my favorite head coach. It's been rumored that Mike Tomlin is going to have a conversation with his family and the Rooney family about maybe stepping away from the Pittsburgh Steelers. And in stepping away, it doesn't mean that he's retiring, right? We've seen Sean Payton step away and then come back to coaching. We saw Mike McCarthy not necessarily step away, but he got fired and sat back and didn't coach right away. I think this was good for Israel Adesanya. You brought up the Dracus Duplessis sort of, to me, it was just a bad look for Israel Adesanya inside the octagon. I didn't love that for him. But when you see someone get that sort of out of control, that's had to compete at such a high level for so many years in order to become who he is, it does say that what's going on is a lot for him. And now I believe getting the step back and he's going to be outside of a middleweight championship fight in the UFC for the first time in 6 years. And sometimes when you got to sit there and watch that, it's like it's what it became for me after 2008 winning a Super Bowl, right? When I used to watch it, mm-hmm. It was always, man, one day, man, I want to get there. One day I want to get there. After winning it, I was like, I'm supposed to be there. Every time I'm not there, it's a missed opportunity. right? That's our spot. That's our chance, right? We're supposed to be holding the Lombardi. How much do you think watching this fight, not being a part of it, DC, will re-energize Israel Adesanya and let him know that he's still a savage and he wants what was once his back again?
It's going to make a fire burn in his belly, RC. I don't think a true champion can't watch those things, especially in a division where you've ruled for so long and not have those feelings. Izzy's going to start to think to himself, I can still do this, especially if he knows what was going on behind closed doors much better than all of us. We don't know what Adesanya was going through heading into the fight. He might have been fine, but if there was anything going on, he could kind of look back to that and go, you know what? I can fix this, 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 and this as I head into this. And I think that is going to be one of the reasons why he's sitting there watching and hoping for a certain outcome. Because excitement comes in different forms. There's a different level of excitement to rematch Strickland, and there's a different level of excitement to finally fight Du Plessis. So I think he's going to be hopeful this weekend watching to see what's next for him. RC, before we tap in and tap out, horrible decision for Mike Tomlin. That dude's been making it work with not great teams. It's not like he's had the best teams.
I mean, he ain't got no quarterback
right now.
He's still
getting to the playoffs.
Yeah.
He hasn't had one for years. At one point, they had the dude from Oklahoma State quarterbacking the team, and I know how bad that dude is.
He's there now.
He's still the quarterback.
That's who quarterbacked him yesterday. Yeah, like that's what – and we know what Big Ben turned into, but I think it's more, honestly, DC, I think it's more about 17 years doing the same job in the same place and having to work with some teams that aren't necessarily as talented as others. But also, think about this, bro. He's carrying the weight of African-American coaches. There isn't a D'Amico, there isn't a D'Amico Ryans or a Marcus Freeman at Notre Dame that doesn't want Mike Tomlin's contact, that doesn't want his advice, that doesn't want his mentorship. And I do believe that carrying that all, right, and then every time there a Brian Flores becomes available, Mike Tomlin has to swoop in and get him on his coaching staff. Or we're always asking, when will Mike Tomlin have an African-American coordinator, whether it be offensively, you know, now he has one defensively in Terrell Austin. And so I think it's just a heavy crown to wear sometimes, which I'm sure the heavyweight championship belt can be in the UFC. And I think it's about himself, his mental state, his health, his family's health, that he's concerned with that. And so now we can tap in, tap out.
Yeah, let's tap in, tap out. Okay. Carper Jake, let's go.
All right, guys, sorry, but we're going to talk about it. UFC 297's co-main event features Raquel Pennington versus Myra Brenna Silva for the vacant women's bantamweight title. So, DC, tap in or tap out. Either of these ladies have the potential for a long title reign.
Oh, man. You know, they're both very tough. They're both very good. Look, what Raquel Pennington has done is nothing short of amazing, especially after the way that the fight with Amanda Nunes was done, when she essentially wanted to stop on the stool in her corner, said, no way, you're going to finish. And Myra Brenna Silva says going up to 135 has been an absolute savage. So, yes, they have potential. But it's hard to call it whenever you have a Juliana Pena, who many thought would be in the title fight, just kind of waiting in the wings.
Yeah, I think Juliana Pena is the one we point to, especially given her two fights with Amanda Nunes, obviously submitting her. But I do tap in that these fighters have the potential, because the difference in this weight class is there is no Amanda Nunes, right? There is a lot of deficiencies and deficits when we look at the other fighters in this weight class, and they can all be beaten. They can all be had for their weaknesses. And so these two fighters do have the potential.
Because last week,
isn't it crazy, RC, how one person leaving a division makes it so different? I mean, just losing Amanda, and now everybody's just even.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, guys, last week, Dana announced Zhang Weili will defend her strawweight title against Yan Xiaonan at UFC 300. RC, tap in or tap out, this was the right fight to make for Zhang's next title defense.
So, I tap in that this was the right fight to make. And I know you can't just pop up UFC events anywhere, but man, it would have been cool if they fought in their homeland. But this is absolutely the right fight to make. Zhang Weili, to me, is one of the top athletes, men or women, in the entire UFC. And Yan Xiaonan is definitely the next fighter who deserves a shot at the belt.
RC, you getting real good with those names, my guy. You're getting real good with those names, dog. Those names are not ones you would have got a couple years ago. Guys, it is the fight. And RC, you know, you said you would have liked to see it in China. There was a fight scheduled in China back in December. And my hope was that those two would have fought then. Obviously, the fight didn't happen over in China.
Yeah.
And those two got pushed to UFC 300. The only caveat is that I thought maybe Zhang Weili would be the first person to fight for a second championship against Alexa Grasso.
Alexa Grasso.
But great fight. I agree with it.
Prior to his UFC 299 rematch versus Chito Vera, Sean O'Malley is already talking about a potential champ fight versus featherweight challenger Ilya Topuria. DC, tap in or tap out, O'Malley looking too far ahead before his upcoming title fight in March?
I tap out not because he's looking too far ahead. I tap out because there's work to be done. I mean, he just got the belt. Like that's the problem with the champ thing now. It's like people don't feel like they have to, like, lock down their division before they start talking about moving up. You know, TJ Dillashaw had defended his belt multiple times at bantamweight when he went down. I had defended my belt multiple times. So did Henry Cejudo when he went up. Amanda Nunes, for sure. But the only one that went up without defending was Connor. But not everybody's Connor. Even when Izzy tried, Izzy had defended the middleweight belt for so many times. I just think that you got to kind of lay the foundation in your division before you start changing division. So not that he's looking past Chito, and if he is, that's a mistake. But what about just beating a couple of these dudes at 135 before you start going up to try to challenge for another belt? And also, how about him just saying that Ilya is going to beat Volkanovski like it's an easy thing?
Yeah, like I was about to say, that's the crazier part to me, that you're talking about fighting Ilya Topuria and he hasn't even had the championship. And by the way, he's fighting one of the greatest pound-for-pound fighters of all time. I tap out. I don't care. Remember what the tap out or tap in is. I don't believe he's looking too far ahead. I believe he should be focused and is focused on Chito Vera. I just believe that Sean O'Malley is a great promoter. Sean O'Malley is a great marketer. And two, he's pointing to Ilya Topuria and not Alexander Volkanovski because he knows if Volk is at his best, he gonna get his butt whipped. He talking to the one person out of those two he think he could beat, because he know for sure he can't beat that little man from New Zealand or Australia, wherever he's from.
All right, guys, lastly, we know RC shows out with his style, but last week on First Take, Stephen A. Smith stepped up his own game. Take a listen.
You know, I figured since it was Friday and I watched my man Shannon Sharp, I mean, I'm not talking about just Shannon Sharp, but Chris Canty in the house, Swaggoo and all of this other stuff, everybody's been talking, but there's one person that's been talking about the wardrobe, he's been talking about how fly he looks no matter what he wears, and that's my man RC, Ryan Clark. And I have to confess, the brother was looking fly in some of these things. So guess what I went out and did, everybody?
You check out the look right here.
You check out the look right here. Do you see me? Do you see me? That's all I'm trying to say. I said, you know what? Here's the deal, fellas. Don't hate. Emulate. That's what I did. RC, this is dedicated to you, my brother. First Takes in the house. Holla at your boy! Whoa!
DC, tap in or tap out. Stephen A. Smith is more fly than our own RC.
It looked like RC and Stephen A. and Chris Canty. It looked like all three of them was wearing that little shirt. Everybody wearing that little shirt, RC. You done got the whole crew wearing them preacher shirts. Nah, man. Let me tell you something. The greatest form of flattery is imitation. And so while they're trying to look like the boy, they don't look like the boy because, look, you see Stephen A., like, his neck not long enough. RC got a long neck. So because he got a long neck, those preacher shirts look good on him, man. Nobody wear that shirt like my boy RC.
Hey, Here's what's funny, Corporate Jake in D.C. I'm going to let the world know. That's actually a snapshot of D.C. and I's very first show in Las Vegas. That is what I wore on the first show we ever had. Look how much skinnier and younger I was. D.C.'s aged me like the White House aged President Obama. But we all know the folks ain't flyer than me, Jake. Corporate Jake, you know Stephen A. can't hang, man. Come on now. He out there looking like Nino Brown.
RC, let me say this, RC. That first picture from the first show, your skin look even darker because you had less money. That was before the pivot, so you done glowed up. So you look like a completely different person now that you start to do the show. But RC, very rarely do you make mistakes on the wardrobe front. But one of those days was yesterday. I mean, well, I mean, RC, I don't love this. I don't love this, RC. I don't love
DC,
this. I saw it. I saw it and told Corporate Jake I got to see this on the show.
Why does it look like I have a shirt on? DC, I was getting texts from everybody being like, say, bro, do you not have a shirt under your coat? And I think you're right, though. I didn't got light skin because in the summer, that shirt wouldn't have matched my skin tone, and people would have been able to tell. I was out there dressed like Dwayne Wade, man. Oh, no.
Hey, dog, you know what I'm saying? RC, you very rarely make mistakes. I said, hey, Jake, I need that one for Monday Night Countdown because he was out there looking bad. I was so happy that you finally had a I don't care about the truth. I insist on believing RT just wanted to get sexy with it and go shirtless for the playoffs. Someone Photoshop a gold chain on that dude. RC, they on your head, my brother. That's what happens first when you dress too good all the time.
DC, first off, that coat was fire. It was a three
it was nice.
Button. It was a three button double breasted. I don't care that y'all couldn't see my shirt. I was still fly. I'm not mad. Like, and I'm going to keep doing what I do. I have my chest open like Lewis Riddick. You know what I mean? It is what it is. Hey, DC, man, I appreciate you, bro. Happy for the guilt for your team at Gilroy. Able to go down to Gonzalez, go down to the boot, dominate. You know, you guys just keep it up. Y'all guys just keep doing what you're doing.
I appreciate it, RC. RC, we not welcome back to Louisiana. Them stupid kids done got me banned from my own state by winning too much. You can't go to Louisiana and win too much because they going to run you out of the state. Guys, get us wherever you get your podcast every Tuesday on ESPN2 at midnight Eastern. I'm Daniel Cormier. That's Ryan Clark. Guys, we love doing the show every single week. Until next time, peace.